is the one day of the week that I, in all honesty, look forward to. And the reason for that being is that there's much that we can share that can be of tremendous benefit to our listeners. Good evening, Jeffrey Bennett here. Technically on Perspectives on America, but more importantly on Wednesdays, to health with you. For that is what we discuss. Some months ago, in my previous endeavors at RBN, we did a one-hour program, which each Wednesday we would basically discuss health issues, cancer, which we're going to discuss in depth tonight for the next 2 hours. No, it's going to raise questions. It's going to give you some things to watch for and be careful of. Interesting piece that I published on our website, drkelly.net, the other day. Cancer cases are expected to hit record high this year. Six of the most common cancers are on the rise, and most disturbingly, are occurring in younger populations. In a report published on January 17th, just days ago, by the American Cancer Society, has estimated that new cancer cases will surpass 2 million in 2024, which hits a record high. And while the risk of dying from cancer has declined, we're told, cancer incidence has been rising for six of the most common cancers: breast cancer, prostate, endometrial, pancreatic, of course, kidney, and melanoma. Now, these new estimates represent a 2% increase from the American Cancer Society's 2023 estimates. Overall, cancer incidence, American Cancer Society says, is stable in men and increases slightly by 0.1% per year in women. The number of cancer cases increases each year mostly because of the aging and the growth of the population. That, according to Rebecca Siegel, the lead author of the report. She's a cancer epidemiologist, senior scientific director of surveillance research at the American Cancer Society. She adds that prostate cancer is the most rapidly increasing by 3% per year, mostly due to advanced stage disease diagnosis. Now, the report also found that cancers have been increasing in younger people, specifically colorectal cancer in those under 55, cervical cancer in women aged 30 to 44, oral cancers associated with the human HPV, and liver cancer in women have also increased. ACS's estimation was based on case numbers reported from 2006 to 2020 in all 50 states. There is currently no available data on real-life cancer cases past 2020. It's like, do they just not want to talk about it? These are the kind of things we're going to discuss a little bit during this hour tonight, or 2 hours. The authors in their report continue by saying modeled counts were then projected forward 4 years based on the most recent four-year average annual percent change, which means that the new facts and figures on 2024 do not have information on possible COVID virus or vaccine-related effects on cancer incidence. That according to Dr. Harvey Risch, professor emeritus at epidemiology at Yale University, with particular interest in cancer. Risch said that ACS's estimations for 2024 may be reliable as long as nothing much is happening in the population. But with COVID-19 and its mass vaccine rollouts, which began coming out at the end of 2020, Relying on the older data to estimate recent incidents would not be reliable, he said. And though the projection included 2020 data, the report was modeled on 15 years of data. So 2020's impact on the report's trajectory would be highly drowned out, maybe quite insignificant. It would be useful to examine the 2020 data separately, he said. He has analyzed the 2020 publicly available surveillance, epidemiology, and results, which are also included in the ACS's report. There is a deficit, he explained, for 2020 of about 11%, which likely reflects the March-May lockdown effects that the ACS discussed as to how they accounted for all of that. This story just kind of goes on and on and on to the point of, okay, you've made your point. But let's discuss some of the reasons for the increase in cancer cases. For the rise in cancer cases could be particularly due to overdiagnosis. The authors said that increased cancer screening is an unlikely cause. Take colorectal cancer, for example. People born after the 1950s have higher risk for many cancers, most notably colorectal cancer. And we know it's not more screening because the death rate for colorectal cancer is increasing in the population as well as the incidence rate. If the uptick is due to more screening, then there should be a greater decline in the death rate. The obesity epidemic likely contributes, but does not fully explain the trend, it continues. There is much research in the area, but some hypotheses include changes in diet, like more processed food, changes in the gut microbiome, overuse of antibiotics, microplastic exposure. Stress and changes in sexual behavior could also be a factor. That, according to a columnist and infectious disease specialist, Dr. Yuhong Dong. I find that interesting. They're talking about changes in sexual behavior, and the doctor's name is Yuhong Dong. Okay. I'll take that seriously and let it go at that. But she does say that in recent decades, there was an emerging trend that people tend to be engaged in sexual activity at a younger age, have multiple sexual partners, which can increase the likelihood of HPV infection. And it's well recognized that HPV is a carcinogenic virus. The role of HPV in causing cancer is primarily due to its cancer-inducing proteins. And those proteins break down the body's tumor-fighting mechanisms, leading to rapid and uncontrolled cell multiplication. And recently, more emerging evidence also suggests that HPV is linked to both prostate and thyroid cancer. And then came COVID-19 and the vaccines. And while the American Cancer Society's data does not show any effects of COVID-19 nor its vaccines, there are concerns that frequent use of the COVID-19 vaccine could also be detrimental to our cellular genes and make them vulnerable to cancer, according to Dr. Dong. The recent detection of the SB40 promoter enhancer gene in the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines has also led some cancer experts to express concerns about potential cancer interactions. Allow me to insert a story that I've shared with our listening audience for a number of years now. We go back and make reference to 2020. In May of 2020, which was still early in the COVID nonsense, one night I thought I was having a mini stroke. I was not going to wait for an ambulance. I told my wife, get me to the hospital right now. She got me up there. Her driving scares the hell out of me. That should have given me a heart attack, but it didn't. But the way I was walking to get into her car was amazing. She had to pull the car out of the garage so I had enough room to manipulate. I was taking long steps. I mean, I was stretching myself out. It was weird. No control. She gets me up to the hospital. I had her pull up to the front. I got out and said, go park the car and come on inside. I walked in the door. Woman gets up and she's got a mask on. And she says, what can I do for you? I said, I think I'm having a stroke. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. She gets me inside into the sign-in area, the registration area. And they sat me down. The woman said, have you got your ID and your medical card with you? I said, yeah. And I reached in my wallet, pulled it out with no problem, no sweat. I wasn't walking strange anymore. And she said, Mr. Bennett, we've got you on record. Please, we're going to take you right in. They took me into one of the little rooms where they do some quick testing to see just how qualified you are to be checking in there. And the doctor begins to do a series of tests. You know, they're running my blood pressure. They're seeing my heart rate and all this kind of stuff. And he says, okay, I want you to reach your left hand out. And he begins raising his knee. I'm supposed to take my left hand and push down on his knee to see what the pressure's like. Then he picks up his other knee and tells me to take the right hand and do the same thing. He then gives me his hands, his left and right hand with the palm up, and I'm supposed to do the same thing with his hands as he moves them up. He's trying to see what my pressure of my hands are. No problem with it. And then he takes his finger and holds it directly in front of my nose, and I'm supposed to follow his finger with my eyes. I instantly knew what was wrong. I had not had a stroke. I had had a rectal migraine. Not rectal, excuse me. Optical migraine. I had had one several years before that. It's like you're getting a headache, except it's going through your eyes. It completely screws up your vision. The first rectal, I keep saying that word. What the heck that's all about. The first optical migraine that I had had 2 years before, I was working on the computer, and all of a sudden my eyes started going haywire, and I saw something in the shape of a stop sign. But in that stop sign was not the word stop. It was images that were alternating black and white. That is, to some degree, exactly what had happened to me when I was in this hospital in May of 2020, except that the image I saw was still black and white, but it was much thinner. It was like in a kind of a sexy piece of black cloth. But I had the same triangular black and white images, at which point in time I said to the doctor, stop, I know exactly what's going on. I've had a rectal, don't ask me why I keep doing that, that I'd had this optical migraine. Okay, Mr. Bennett, that's fine. So, first of all, they're a doctor. They're not going to believe me. They figure that I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. So they move me into a little temporary room. They've got me up on a bed. They've got me plugged in. They're walking my heart rate. All this nonsense. I'm in there for several hours. And, you know, if you got to get up and go to the bathroom, oh, they don't want you doing that. Oh, no, they're going to stick a bottle. And you can kind of stick your thing in there and go pee-pee or whatever the case may be. I refused to do it. I got up and walked to the little restroom that was in the room and did my thing and got back over there, which surprised the living hell out of me. And I had no problem walking. Well, long story short, I was in that hospital for roughly 21 hours in the ER. They eventually took me out of the room that I was in, this little bed thing that had the doing all his tests and just monitoring me. And they moved me into one of the little curtained rooms in the ER, which, you know, you got 10 or 12 down the same aisle, and they got curtains wrapped around it. And the character on the other side of me was kept moving his chair back, pushing the curtain into our room. My wife is allowed. She's staying with me the whole time. And they're still running more tests, and they'd come back. They'd check my temperature. They do this. They do that. They'd interview me. And then this doctor comes by. Now, keep in mind, once again, this is very early in COVID. All the medical practitioners, the doctors, the nurses, the cleaning staff, they all had masks on. Not a single patient was wearing a mask. Not a one of us. So this doctor comes by to interview me, and this is many hours later, maybe 3, 4, 5 hours later. And he's asking me a series of questions. And keep in mind, this is May of 2020. And as he gets ready to leave, he said, Oh, Mr. Bennett, please allow me to ask you a question. Are you up to date with your vaccines? My answer to him instantly was, sir, yes, I'm up to date. As a matter of fact, I've been up to date since May the 28th of 1968, 6 days before I landed in Vietnam. And I've never had another vaccine since. He looks at me, shakes his eyebrows up and down with a big smile, thumbs up, and walks away. Now, that doesn't mean they're letting me go. No, they're going to run CAT CT scans on me. They're going to run MRIs. You know, they've got so many things that they're doing and running x-rays and all this business to see what the heck is going on. Well, eventually they got a room for me. I didn't have to share a room. They took me up to the top floor of the hospital. Got me moved into a room. Got me all set up. And, of course, they hooked me up to the monitor. And this, within 15 minutes, the guy who had taken me up to that room showed up again and said, Mr. Bennett, I'm here to take you downstairs. You're leaving. I said, oh, what's this all about? He said, well, it turns out that your diagnosis was correct. You'd had an optical migraine. There's no longer a need for you to be here. And they sent me home. Interesting enough, I've never had another optical migraine since. But I've had a lot of other issues. And I just find it interesting to share this story because of the ongoing continued discussion of COVID-19 and the vaccinations, and oh my goodness, they're starting to push the mask business again this year, and they're trying to tell people to get up to their 7th and 8th vaccination, and oh my God, please, enough is enough is enough. And so all this detection of the SV40 promoter enhancer gene in the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines has led some cancer experts to express concerns about potential cancer interactions. Dr. Wafik Eldiri, the director of the Cancer Center at Brown University, wrote recently that while the SV40 promoter is not the potent cancer-causing element to T antigen of the SV40 virus, he is concerned that the spike proteins produced from the virus and the vaccine may exert effects on other common cancer-enhancing pathways. Studies have suggested that the spike protein may be able to interact with a well-known protein responsible for preventing cancer in the body called P53. And if the P53 gene and its proteins get suppressed, the body may be at a greater risk of cancer. Dr. Eldieri said that as a P53 researcher, I wanted to study the spike protein more and its effects on P53 proposed. It was proposed in 2020, but did not have sufficient resources. Well, some of what I've just shared with you gets technologically strange. It's like, okay, But it's the headline that gets it. Cancer cases expect to hit record high in 2024. These are the things that become important. Now, something that I shared with my audience some months ago was somewhat of an introduction. It is a piece that I wrote and included in our publication of Dr. Kelly's books, Dr. William Donald Kelly. Became the basis for all the work that I've done in this field in 20-odd years. No, I'm not a doctor. I don't claim to be. One time in my life, I came across exactly what had hit me, and unfortunately, I overshadowed all the doctors in that hospital. When Kelly passed away in 2005, we continued to market his books, which I had probably been the biggest seller of Dr. Kelly's books. The original book was called One Answer to Cancer. It subsequently went through a title change because of some a sales pitch that was given to Kelly. Let's change the title of the book and let's put a nice colored cover on it. We'll get these books in every bookstore in the country, which never happened. And then the FDA came along and put a cease and desist on the marketing and the publication of the book because, well, the title was Cancer, Curing the Incurable. Wait, what do you mean curing? You can't cure cancer, you can only treat it. That's their mentality. Well, I was asked by the Kelly estate and his family, who I've known for many, many years, to take over the publication of the book, but we had to come up with a new title. Took me about 5 seconds to come up with that new title. We called it Victory Over Cancer Without Surgery, Chemotherapy, and Radiation. As I was putting the book together, I added some things, not to alter Kelly's work. I refused to do that. We actually restored some of his words and his work that had been eliminated by the other guy who didn't understand what he was doing. And I wrote this piece on page 166 called The Lecture. Well, we're not going to get into the lecture portion of this right now. But for those of you who are newer listeners to my program, I want to share this with you, and then we're going to move forward. On my May 7th, 2014 global broadcast to Health With You, I was privileged to share with my audience that which I'm about to share with you now. Because this story opened my eyes to a side I had never witnessed of Dr. Kelly. What appeared to be not only a dedicated man, something which I had never doubted in the years I knew and worked with him, but a man with a sense of humor. At that time, much more than a twinkle in his eye. All of this was before the death of Steve McQueen, before the studies of Kelly's work and counselee files by Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez under the guidance of Dr. Robert Good, before the attacks on Kelly by representative entertainers of the mainstream media, before multiple attacks on him by various factions of both state and federal governments, and before the attempts on Kelly's life, all of which drove this tireless champion of truth underground for some years, sometimes in Pennsylvania, other times in Washington State, and still other times, well, who really knows where. What we published in the book was not Kelly that I remember. I met Kelly some 28 years later when all the years of fighting our common enemy had taken its toll, but had not quite beaten him into submission, and they never really quite did either. He'd heard of my then radio program, Perspectives on America, requested to be a guest, as he apparently liked what and who he had heard. Kelly and I spoke for a while on the phone. He suggested that he mail a copy of his then title, One Answer to Cancer, for me to read, and that if I liked it and found it of import, might I consider having him on the program. I received the book a week or so later. I read it in one sitting that very night. Frankly, my friends, I was fascinated. I read it again the next night. And I decided then and there that this needed to be shared with the world. So we scheduled Kelly's first appearance for January the 28th, 1999. People, today is January the 24th, 2024. So how many years ago was that? Well, we'll not bore you with the rest of the story, but I still sit here at my desk all these years later trying to reach those who will listen of the marvels of what this quiet, unassuming genius had to offer the world. And yet Donald Kelly had his dark side as well in those later years. He was quick to jump at you if he felt that you were trying to take advantage of him, as many did. And to ban you from his inner circle, which was small. By the time I'd met Kelly, he'd become a man who trusted very few, and rightfully so. In most cases, he reserved his patience for those who came to seek his guidance in their search for optimum health. This piece that I wrote is an introduction to something that I chose to publish in the book, a lecture. A lecture that he had given in New York City in November of 1971. A totally different Kelly was to be seen and heard. And I could only imagine the joy felt in that room on that day for a man who, less than a decade before, had cured himself of that dreaded disease. He should have had the entire world at his feet. But it was never meant to be. As time progresses to some degree in this program tonight, we will be making numerous references to Kelly. Several pieces that I have recently published on our website, drkelly.net. That's drkelly.net. There's no period between the DR and the Kelly. Two pieces, one of which is a republication, which I will bring up every now and then. Another one is a piece I've been sitting on for a lot of years. It was written by another author who is well known and respected in the field of writing about cancer and alternatives. And we'll talk about those in a little while. But the time has come for me to take a very short break. You'll find that if you tune into this program on Wednesdays, that usually at the bottom of the first hour, and sometimes the second, I have a need to go have a dance with Kim. When we come back from this brief interruption, I'll explain to you what I mean by Kim. Stay with us, won't you? That's if Michael's in the room and we're set to dance. Anyway, just in case he doesn't make it. And Michael is my producer on Wednesdays and Thursdays, and we've worked together for many, many years. One of the other pieces that I want to briefly kind of share with you tonight, I'm not going to do the whole thing, because these are some of the things that we try to do, provide information on our website that will help you improve your health. How unexpected weight loss can sometimes be an indicator of cancer. This is a relatively new study that has been done, and health professionals who had unexpected weight loss in the previous 2 years had a significant higher risk of developing cancer during the subsequent 12 months compared to those who did not have recent weight loss. That's a new study that's recently been published by the journal JAMA, J-A-M-A. Unintentional weight loss is losing weight without changing your diet or beginning an exercise program. The study looks at 10% or greater weight loss in the healthcare professionals. You begin to see and understand that I'm not going to sit here on the air and try and guide you as to how you can become free of cancer. But I'm going to give you warning signs, things to make you sometimes sit up and take notice, to see if some of these things are affecting you. Of all the cancers associated with recent weight loss, researchers reported that upper gastrointestinal tract cancer has become the most common. Other types of cancer, including hematologic, colorectal, lung cancers, also found to be more common in those who had recently experienced unintentional weight loss. And the risk of cancer became higher during the first 12 months after weight loss compared to 24 months afterwards. Breast, genital, urinary, brain cancers, as well as melanoma, were not associated with weight loss. Unexplained weight loss has always been a warning sign of a possible underlying condition. That, according to Dr. Well Harvey, hematologist, medical oncologist at Memorial Care Cancer Institute at Orange Coast and Saddleback Medical Centers in California, who was not involved with the research. An unexplained loss of 5% of your body weight in 6 months may be concerning. People who have unexplained weight loss should begin with their family physician. Other symptoms can help to narrow down where to look. Weight loss can signal a digestive disease, such as celiac or problems with thyroid. But as the study points out, it can also signal cancer. And if other illnesses are ruled out, the doctor should investigate further. If cancer is missed, and the doctor and patient have lost the chance to diagnose and treat early, which is important in all cancers, well, we're going to publish this entire piece. It's not published right now, because we're going to discuss in what we published previous research on weight loss and cancer, other health issues associated with rapid weight loss, things like gallstones, poor nutrition, electrolyte imbalances, acute gout, constipation. One of the things they bring up is being overweight increases the risk of certain cancers. So, you see, just losing weight may not be your total cause of cancer. If you're overweight, that itself can increase the risk of certain cancers. These are the kind of things that we'd like to share with you. I'm not going to be your guru. I'm not going to be the know-all, answer-all, etc., etc. No, that's not what I do. We have to challenge you to look at some of the issues that we're dealing with here. It's imperative. You've got to pay attention to what's going on. It's amazingly frustrating. But there are four cancers which are now rising for adults of all ages. Good news, deaths from cancer have steadily lowered over the past 30 years. Speaking to the power of medical advancements and consumer awareness about the importance of checkups and screenings. But on the other hand, the diagnosis of cancer is increasing, especially among younger American adults. According to the American Cancer Society report published January 17th, this could be the first year we see more than 2 million cases of cancer diagnosed. These are the things we have to pay attention to. But the good news is that deaths from cancer have lowered over the past 30 years. Speaking to the power of medical advancements, consumer awareness about the importance of checkups and screenings. But you see, why is it people just go in for checkups and screenings? Why can't people be aware of their own health issues? Taking a look at what they're eating, how they're eating. Maybe for their metabolic type, they're not eating properly. Well, what is that, Bennett? What's metabolic type? We'll get into that in a while. But with all of this, the diagnosis of cancer is increasing, as we mentioned earlier, especially among younger American adults. It's becoming insane. Do you realize that all of this means that 5,500 new cancer cases could be diagnosed each and every day? But wait a minute. Then I have to go take a look at something else. Images that I tend to post on the Kelly site quite often. Picture of a greedy man feeding himself with dollars, money. It's all about greed. In so many respects, it is about money. That's right, it's not about curing cancer, it's about treating cancer. Because that's where the money is, treating it. You think I'm whacked? We might even have some doctors tuning in tonight. As a matter of fact, I've got a group of doctors that tunes in every week when I do this. The doctor who lives in Indiana, and he ordered Dr. Kelly's books from me a year or so ago. Unbeknownst to me, he didn't tell me that he diagnosed cancer within himself and began to follow the Kelly program and has made considerable difference in his life and has began to share this information with other medical practitioners. What's interesting about this gentleman is that in 1972, now my wife and I at that point in time, we've been together now 53 years, we lived in Lincolnwood, Illinois, suburb of North Chicago. And my great-grandmother lived in Highland Park or Ravinia, Illinois, which is a little further north from us. But my wife and I would go to, oh, and by the way, I worked at a place in Evanston, Illinois. Now, at that time, this doctor I'm making reference to that now lives in Indiana, married, kids, college, the whole nine yards, was going to medical school at Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois. And his first working within the medical profession as part of his training was at the hospital in Evanston, Illinois. Became interesting because I was working in Evanston, Illinois. And on a very strange date in 1972 in the summer, my wife and I had gone up to Ravinia. Ravinia is a very, very interesting community. It's kind of a suburb of Highland Park, but it's still kind of a standalone little community of its own. Ravinia used to put on a multi-month live music fest that brought in some big names. Now, in Highland Park, or in Northbrook, no, she was living in Highland Park by then, that's right. She was divorced, had her kids with her, living in Highland Park. A woman that had grown up with my mother, she was one of my mother's three best friends. I knew them all. I knew every one of them. And we went to a concert in Ravinia. We sat on the grass, took food with us, some wine, whatever the case may happen to be. And we attended a concert with Ella Fitzgerald and Count Basie. How strange. On that very same night, this doctor that now lives in Indiana was at the same exact concert. We didn't know each other. We've never met to this day, other than our conversations on the phone and through our emails, etc., etc. How unique. But things to certainly look at, things to consider, things to understand when we get into this whole discussion about cancer. Everybody wants to run to the doctors and pay big fees. Heal me, heal me. There's a lot of things you can do to heal yourself. They're amongst the things that we try to teach our listeners, to at least raise awareness factors that there are things that they can do to improve their own health without having to fork out to the doctors every time you get a sniffle. Different groups are seeing higher cancer diagnosis rates than they were before. But people over 65 old years of age have traditionally been the demographic diagnosed with the highest concentration of cancer cases. That is shifting, as we shared earlier. The report highlights the concerning rise of colorectal cancer in younger adults, that group that includes Americans under 50. And this type of cancer is now the first leading cause of cancer death in men under the age of 50 and the second in women in the same age group. Younger women between 30 and 44, they're contending with increased of cervical cancer. Women are also being diagnosed with more cases of liver cancer. Oral cancers are increasing largely from prior HPV infections. Now, some of this we've shared with you. Different authors, different people looking into this stuff. The report also highlights concerning racial disparities in cancer treatment and diagnosis, calling them striking and persistent. African-American men have a 19% higher risk of dying from cancer versus white men, which the report suggests is largely attributed to prostate cancer, a highly treatable disease. African-American women are also twice as likely to succumb to endometrial cancer than white women. American Indian and Alaska Native populations see striking disparities in cancer mortality. And these populations have been subject to racial discriminations for hundreds of years. Oh, we have to get that one in there, right? But the resulting inequality in wealth has resulted in less access to fresh food, safe places to live and exercise, receipt of high-quality cancer prevention, early detection and treatment. Of course, it's another reminder that early detection and treatment are key for all age groups. Cancer can be prevented by quitting smoking, keeping up with your doctor's appointments and screenings for cancer and other conditions, and exploring treatment options with your health care provider. Let's take this in a different direction for a minute. There are two books that Dr. Kelly wrote, and I handle both of them. And this is not a sales pitch. We'll briefly reference it as time goes on tonight. There's a book that he published called The Self-Test for the Different Metabolic Types. Oh, guess what just happened? That is interesting. Oh, goody, goody. My website just went haywire. This has been happening on and off for several weeks now. This is very unique. Just what I need in the midst of this program. I'm not happy about that. Let's pop something open here and see what happens. Very, very interesting. I don't like this. Come on, come on, come on. This is amazing. Bear with me a second. Let's see if this opens up on the other page. It opened up there. That's weird. I'm going to have a talk with my web provider because something is going haywire again. I think there's some people blocking access. You got the whole 7-minute outro for this hour loaded. We can jump off. What's our 7-minute outro? What are we doing there? The dance? What are we doing? Yeah, that's okay. I'm going to keep going here for a while. Yeah, we're doing some different things music-wise tonight. We're going to have our normal opening and closing, but we've got a couple of different pieces of jazz-type music we're going to use on this program tonight. If you go to our website, drkelly.net, there is a section called The Bookstore. If you click on the segment, Dr. Kelly's Self-Test for the Different Metabolic Types, this book is for people who have not been diagnosed with cancer. But what it does, it walks you through massive dietary issues that you can become responsible for. It may, for your better health, change what your eating habits are. It's well worth reading about this. It'll explain to you. We, several weeks ago, did a very lengthy segment on this program talking about, and I'm going to guide you where you can find this information, unbelievable stuff that Kelly had created. He was considered the greatest advancement in the field in 150 years. And that was by the people at Price Pottinger. Very, very highly respected, well-known organization. Something to look at. No, we won't plan on going the whole 7 hour. I'm doing fine, man. Doing fine. What do we got here? We got another piece here. Oh, these are the kind of articles I love. I'm going to kind of maybe close this out with this, sharing this story. These are the kind of headlines I really get ticked off when I find. 1 in 5 hospital deaths in this country, in the United States, 1 in 5 are the result of doctor errors, misdiagnosis in the hospital. There's a study published last month in the journal JAMA, which examined 2019 medical records from nearly 2,500 patients in 29 different American hospitals. All the patients were transported to the intensive care unit, the ICU, died while hospitalized, or both. The researchers found that 23% of those patients were misdiagnosed or received a delayed diagnosis, and nearly 18% of them died or suffered other serious harm. And the findings align with other stark findings, which showed that over 250,000 Americans die every year after being diagnosed in the emergency room. Over 250,000 Americans die every year after being misdiagnosed in the emergency room. Nearly 18% of the patients who are misdiagnosed die or suffer serious harm as a result. In a study published in BMJ, Quality and Safety Protocol found that nearly 800,000 patients die or are permanently disabled every year due to being misdiagnosed. And the top conditions that are misdiagnosed include infections, heart issues, and cancer. Now, I've got this piece published on the website, drkelly.net. It's entitled, 1 in 5 Hospital Deaths Are in the U.S. a Result of Doctor Errors. You may not want to read this stuff, but sometimes it's damned important to go back and look at it. Take a look at the graphs. How many of these are due to infection or vascular or cancer? Yeah. A study published last year in the BMJ Quality and Safety Protocol found that 795,000 patients die or are permanently disabled every year due to being misdiagnosed. 1.5% are heart attacks, 17.5% are strokes, 22.5% due to lung cancer. And the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that nearly 900,000 Americans die every year from heart disease or stroke. But lung cancer, meanwhile, is the deadliest form of cancer in this country, according to the National Cancer Institute. And it accounts for 1 in 5 cancer deaths, followed by colorectal cancer popping up again. which causes 1 in 10 cancer deaths. More than half of lung cancer cases are diagnosed when the disease has traveled to multiple other organs, making it more difficult to treat. And because the overall burden of serious misdiagnosis-related harms is quite large, improving diagnosis of dangerous diseases most often responsible, stroke, sepsis, pneumonia, venous thromboembolism, lung cancer, all these things constitute an urgent public health imperative. A quarter of a million Americans die every year because they're misdiagnosed in the emergency room by bungling doctors. That's according to a federal report. Dr. David Newman Toker, a professor of neurologist at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine who led the BMJ study, told NBC News recently that the rate of misdiagnosis is highest in women and racial and ethnic minorities. These groups are 20 to 30% more likely than white men to receive a wrong or delayed diagnosis. That is significant and inexcusable. Because misdiagnosis is also the most common reason doctors in this country are sued for malpractice, which alleges that a doctor or healthcare professional was negligent, failed to perform their basic duties, or caused a patient to die or become injured needlessly. And this goes on and on and on. But Dr. Hardeep Singh, a physician at Baylor College of Medicine who specializes in reducing diagnostic errors, recently told NBC News that the vast majority of diagnosis can be made by getting to know the patient's story really well, asking follow-up questions, examining the patient, and ordering basic tests. Dr. Singh said one of the things we hear over and over again is the doctor didn't listen to me. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. I'll tell you what we're going to do. Michael's ready. We're going to go for some music. And we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit about pancreatic cancer. Be talking about some other things. Stay with us, won't you? For the second hour of The Health With You. Thank you.
The Hebo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Do you begin to smell some funky little things going on? Let me share this story with you. It's not so much a story. It's something I wrote years ago. Read your history, people. Stock markets collapse on Friday. Bank seizures, closures, holidays take place after business hours on Friday. Do currencies or governments also collapse on Friday? Tomorrow's Friday. Will the end come on this Friday, or will the inevitable collapse hold off for a while? The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, people, and the government is out to make you and I pay for it. And will your savings survive a global banking wipeout? What happens when the U.S. sees hyperinflation? What if taxes soar not only for the rich? Can you survive the stock market tanks? Look, between a stock market wipeout, waves of bank failures, soaring government spending that will lead to hyperinflation, and the destruction of the dollar's value, isn't it time that you prepare for the uncertainty which lies ahead? Protect your money now or forever kiss it goodbye. My friends, I offer you over 6 decades experience of hard asset ownership and knowledge. And I'm prepared to handle the smallest detail in the balanced protection of your portfolio. For as the future of uncertainty continues to blanket this nation of ours, I believe that I can offer you the privacy, safety, security, and possibly some profitability which you deserve. And so I invite you to visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com for further information regarding protecting your wealth. Or call me, Jeffrey Bennett, at 602-799-8214, or by email at KettleMoraineLTD@cox.net for private consultation. Once again, our phone number, 602-799-8214. It's almost Friday.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.